Hi, Foxies. The episode you're trying to listen to is right around the corner, but first, we need your help. You may have noticed that there are no ads during The Fox and the Foxhound. We prefer this, being ad haters ourselves, but we need your help to keep it that way. If you love this show, please consider signing up as a patron at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. We have Patreon tiers starting at just $1 a month. And not only will you get fun extra content and an unedited cut of every episode 2 days early, you'll be directly responsible for keeping the show going in all of its ad-free glory. Thanks to all of our existing patrons, past patrons, and hopefully future patrons. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to The Fox and the Foxhound.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kevin.
We are a married couple and parents to a very magical toddler. We started our journey around 5 years ago as I revisited the series I've loved for years, and Kevin started his journey into the Potterverse for the first time.
This season, we will be exploring the wizarding world through fan fiction, examining the essence of evil villains with our Dark Dive series, and putting a musical spin on each episode with our hits from the Golden Egg. We also promise to bring you the lighter side of things with our weekly Patronus moments and wildly off-topic tangents and rants.
We love this series and the people who love it with us. So later in the episode, we will let you know how to reach us directly and stay in touch with the community of loyal Foxies who drive the content of our show. Welcome.
Let's go. Love is a smoke made with the fume of sighs, being purged, a fire sparkling in lover's eyes. Being vexed, a sea nourished with loving tears.
Is that Nat King Cole reading poetry?
No, that's just like my weird like Shakespeare teacher.
It's voice. A little Morgan Freeman too in there.
I had to read that because I say that quote, I like mess it up, but I say that to you all the time.
You do say that a lot.
What is it else? A madness most discreet, a choking gall and a preserving sweet.
You're making really intense eye contact with me right now, and it's unnerving.
We have an unbreakable vow.
Make the unbreakable vow. We're going to talk about the unbreakable vow, the chapter, the unbreakable vow. But first, top of the show announcements, which is just the one. Next week, we're doing more All the Young Dudes. And I'll tell you why, because a couple of our listeners on Discord are like reading along with us, but they have skyrocketed ahead of us, and honestly, it is sounding really good, and so I don't want to be out of the loop anymore.
I'm excited to jump back into it.
Me too.
It was fun reading an old Christmas chapter.
I know. Okay, first of all,
HP and the HBP chapter 15. That's Harry Potter and the High Blood Pressure, which has been my story lately. Blood
Prince, High Blood Pressure. I never made that connection.
Hypertensio.
In case you didn't listen last week or you missed it, the reason we are revisiting the chapter, The Unbreakable Vow, is because we thought it might be fun to ask ChatGPT to give us a random chapter to revisit. And we'll do this here and there because we really liked revisiting the 15 best Harry Potter chapters last season. Yeah. Like, those were super fun. And we didn't really want to lose that magic. So this was the first one that ChatGPT spit out for us. This is not the chapter I thought it was.
Me either.
Like, at all. I totally thought, you remember you were like, which book is it in? I said, Half-Blood Prince, it'll be at the very beginning. And when you said it was chapter, what'd you say, 15? I was like, hang on a second. Does it really take that long in Half-Blood Prince before Narcissa Malfoy and Snape are making the unbreakable vow in Snape's fucking apartment?
Yeah.
That, I was like off kilter. When I started reading this chapter, I was like, God, this is not the one I thought it was, but a great chapter nonetheless. I actually was less annoyed knowing it was this chapter because all I can see is fucking Helena Bonham Carter, the unbreakable vow.
I walked away thinking, what a fun and very problematic school to attend.
Jesus Christ.
Hello.
This, I put in my notes that I feel like this chapter is kind of like the perfect microcosm for Half-Blood Prince, the book, because you have like spicy Harry being pretty spicy. And like,
you have grumpy Ron.
You have grumpy Ron. You have conspiracy theory Harry, like that meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with the fucking whiteboard and the strings. You have like drunken, irresponsible adults. You have teenagers being really teenagery. Tragic Draco. I mean, I feel like Stefan's like this chapter has everything.
I know. I think this chapter is the most the author ever leaned into the teenage romance side of Hogwarts.
Definitely.
You can't overlook it. You can't not have it, or it's not a realistic portrayal of young people's lives.
Right.
At the same time, it's not Twilight. Like, it doesn't focus so much on romantic arcs and storylines. Yeah. So I thought it was fun to get a little Saved by the Bell type of action going on.
Yes. And you have like the kind of almost like the teenager politics of like the games that they play with each other. And you're right. I mean, we really don't necessarily get that anywhere else.
And I've been thinking a lot lately about starting a Dawson's Creek rewatch.
Oh, damn.
And then when ChatGPT picked this chapter, I thought, that's the universe.
That's the sign. That's your sign. We did also just watch Bluey the Sign yesterday. And I think it's taken me a full day to recover emotionally.
And it opened up my eyes. I saw the sign.
Yep. And Ace of Base. Okay, now we're just free associating. So what happens in this chapter?
So it's Christmas time. Mm-hmm. To set you up about where we're at. Draco has possession of this cursed necklace that killed Katie.
Well, I mean, she didn't die.
Messed up Katie Musgraves. What was her name?
Katie Bell.
Katie Bell Muskrat.
So she's like, I got a necklace. Every Casey Musgraves song sounds exactly the same. I'm very sorry, but it does.
Harry is tripping. He's like, I know he's got the necklace. He's got the necklace. Oh, he's got the necklace. I know he's got the necklace. Wapner comes on at 5. And he's freaking out. And Hermione's saying, it's not going to, he's not going to get past the guards and the enchantments and all this stuff with a cursed necklace that killed Katie Musgraves. Like, what are you talking about? You know? Meanwhile, their Romilda Vance has Romilda Vane. I'm reading my own handwriting. Romilda Vance Gill. Go rest high upon that mountain.
Already way, way less hinged than I expected. That's fun.
Romilda Vane. Vince Gill's granddaughter.
Magical granddaughter.
Magical granddaughter.
English granddaughter.
My grandfather plays country music. What? Why did I try to go Irish?
What? Also, that's like not an actual Irish accent. Why did you go the dude from Lucky Charms? They're magically delicious. They're trying to steal me Lucky Charms.
Okay. So Romilda Vane and the girls have cooked up a love potion, and Romilda is trying to slip Harry a Mickey, as they say.
Yeah, she's like not being real subtle about it either.
I haven't been roofied in years. Ron is dating Lavender Brown.
Yeah.
Lavender Brown has her tongue down this boy's throat all the time.
She's
big on PDA. Mm-hmm. He's just like, doesn't seem like he's as into her as she's into him.
Right.
Hermione sort of surprises everybody with this, oh yes, I'm going to the whatever with Cormac.
Yeah. She has this moment in the cafeteria. This is like so savage where they're like, God, Hermione, you really like Quidditch players. And she's like, I like really good Quidditch players.
Oh my God. I love catty Hermione.
Fucking burn. That's like such a good burn. Oh my God.
And Parvati's there.
Yep. Yep.
So there's sort of some weird love stuff going on. So Ron and Hermione are on the outs.
Yep.
Hermione is going to the ball or whatever it is with
Slughorn's party.
Joseph P. Cormac, which was our Cormac 15th U.S. president.
McLaggen.
That's what I said. Cormac Dragon. Harry has no one because he's so in love with Draco. This is all he can think about.
Yeah, that's what it is.
There's a Slughorn party that goes down that we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. So Harry ends up asking Luna because Hermione's kind of like, dude, all these girls are plotting how to sneak you a love potion because they want you to take them to Slughorn's party. Cause like, and you, this is so out of context, but like as a refresher, Slughorn's party is like real exclusive and not everyone is invited because it's like the slug club, like Slughorn is such a problem. But anyway, so Hermione's like, you need to just ask somebody and this will kind of stop all this nonsense. And so he decides to ask our good friend Luna, who is just, I love any chapter with a good amount of Luna.
Yeah, me too. She gets a lot of stage time in this chapter.
Oh my God, she's so good. Why are all of the adults drunk and super irresponsible in this chapter?
Okay, if you want to jump ahead,
let's
I've got some
do
things
it.
To say, but let's jump ahead to the Slughorn party.
Let's do it.
Number one, why are you having an exclusive party just for some students?
It's really
invitation only.
Tacky.
Two, why are the adults all drunk around these kids?
Yeah.
And the kids are drinking mead. Now, you have to understand that America and our relationship to alcohol and children mm-hmm. is different than Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be 21 years old to drink here, pretty much in all 50 states, right?
In all 50 states,
In all 50 states. It's a federal law. You have to be 21 years old. There's no, like, you don't get to start drinking at 18 like right. some European countries. There's not really a huge culture, I don't think, of like, oh, yeah, let your 15-year-old have a beer. Let them have a glass of wine. It's much more like puritanical the way that.
I mean, that was how my house was
growing
up. Like we could have a beer like at home, like at the beach house with our, you know, whatever. But that's not the norm.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have to at least acknowledge that this is, you know, the 90s London or this is 90s England, not.
Well, know, sure.
90s America.
But these are messy. These are messy adults.
They are messy and sloppy, and the things that are coming out of their mouths.
Yes. There's an actual vampire at this party.
Lecherous vampire that's looking at young girls hungrily.
It's really.
He's got hungry eyes. I think it's Slughorn or somebody has to tap him and be like, yo, Terry, scary Terry. Don't go. Suck teenage girls' necks, blood.
Yeah, well, it's like his blood. Okay, Jesus Christ, suck their necks, gross.
Blood,
blood, necks. Yikes. It's like his. It's the guy who like wrote a biography about him, whose name I keep on wanting to call him Houdini. I know his name's not Houdini. Oh, Sanguini is the vampire. That's why I'm thinking that. I don't remember who like the little dude is who like wants to write a book about Harry and like, hey, it'll be, you can just like sit with me for like 5 or 6 hours a few times. Like, Jesus Christ. Slughorn, what is this?
Trelawney?
Trelawney is
girl,
up.
You got to get it together.
Yeah.
She's like, Harry Potter, the boy who lived. Like, could you chill with the boy who lived shit?
Right. And like, why aren't you taking my classes? Seems like someone who's like pretty much doomed to die would want to take divination.
I'm kidding. Past the Boone's farm.
It's, and then she's like talking all this shit about Ferenczi and like, it's messy. It's wicked, wicked messy.
Let's take a quick break from the episode to talk about ways you can support the show, how to contact us, and let us give a couple of big thank yous. Funding for this show comes entirely from our patrons on Patreon. These wonderful people pay for our hosting fees, social media and promotional subscriptions, equipment upgrades and maintenance, and so much more. If you love this show, becoming a patron is the most direct way to support us. Find out more at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. We also understand that money is tight. So if you're looking for a free way to support us, rating and reviewing The Fox and the Foxhound on Apple Podcasts is such a huge help. Not only does it give us the warm and fuzzies, it also promotes the show within Apple Podcasts and helps us reach new potential Foxies. Even if you listen elsewhere, please consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to reach us, the best way is by joining our Discord server, the FFH Mischief Center. There is a link to join on the homepage of our website, thefoxandthefoxhound.com. While you're there, consider sending us a message or a voicemail. Both are easy to find on the site. Or email us at thefoxandthefoxhound@gmail.com. Following us on social media ensures you won't miss any announcements about future meetups, episode delays, and more. We're on Twitter at @foxandfoxhound, no thes, and on Instagram and TikTok at @thefoxandthefoxhound. You can also find our page on Facebook at facebook.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. Finally, we'd like to thank a few very special people. Hannah Gibb, who manages our Discord server and is also a Marauder-level patron. Josh Bailey, our co-producer and manager of Mischief, who is also a Marauder-level patron. Judson Hurd, who composed the original music for our show, and all of our Patreon members. We wouldn't be able to do any of this without all of you. Okay, let's get back to the episode.
So a couple fun takeaways in my analysis of this chapter. And I like it. I think it's a really good chapter.
Yeah.
Do you think the author thought about transfiguration as a concept and transfiguration class? Do you think she thought about that along the lines of like puberty?
Oh, I don't know. I can't say whether or not the author thought of it that way, but I think it's a really interesting metaphor.
So the fun of rereading this stuff, and especially once you kind of understand what the hell's going on,
yeah,
and you can give it a more fun analysis.
Yeah.
To me, it's like there's three layers of reading something. There's like your first read,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the feeling of reread where you start to go, oh, wow, you look at the writing style and you're like, oh, what a cool plot line and development. And then there's a third, more artistic arc or a third level where you just kind of think about what does it mean to me as a fan, not what it means to me in a literary way or an analysis of the plot structure or anything like that.
You get to zoom way out.
So to me, the fact that this chapter is called The Unbreakable Vow, but The Unbreakable Vow is not mentioned until the last sentence.
Right.
To me, The Unbreakable Vow represents the actual breakable vows of relationships.
Oh, that's so nice.
Of friendships.
Yeah.
And romantic relationships and friendships in high school and in these teenage years and how they seem so firm, but they're so loose and they break so easily. And they seem solid, but they're actually fragile. And so you have this, you know, weird stuff going on with Harry, Hermione, and Ron, this sort of fractured thing going on.
Yeah.
Harry's preoccupied with something else. Things aren't going the way they're, you know, supposed to go
right
in the kids' minds. But something that that really stuck out to me that I thought was kind of cool, Ron is so mean to Hermione.
Oh,
right. Like everyone's being mean to everybody in this whole chapter.
Yes, it's very
Ron
spicy.
Is super mean to Hermione. And later on, after we see that that's how like some of the boys are treating the girls, there's this line that I really love that says, Harry was left to ponder in silence the depths to which girls would seek to get revenge. It's just such this obvious double standard.
Yes. You know?
And isn't that the teenage brain?
So
it
kind
of reminded me of in the classic book, Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, the lead guy, he's like trying to talk to this roommate and his roommate's trying to read something. And he's like, damn it, Holden. Like he says something like, hey man, I can't like see, like you're blocking the light or whatever. And it's later on that Holden Caulfield says like, everywhere you go, somebody's standing in your goddamn light. Like he doesn't see what he sees in other people, he doesn't see in himself.
Right.
And so there's that kind of, I just don't know if it was intentional, but I think it's really smart little piece of writing.
It is. I love that you brought up the fact that like the title of this chapter being The Unbreakable Vow and like 98% of this chapter has nothing to do with the unbreakable vow that we're introduced to at the beginning of this book, which is why it was such a surprise for both of us. It sounds like that this was not the chapter where Snape makes the unbreakable vow with Narcissa. This is in fact, this other one. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of different versions of vows, both broken and unbroken in this chapter. It's very, very cool. And I mean, the lines are super blurry. I mean, like we're talking about how messy the adults are, but like maybe that's kind of part of it too, is that the vow that these adults are supposed to be taking to be role models, to be teachers, to be sober, you know, and they're breaking these vows all over the place. You know, it's very, very good. So we do have this end kind of major scene with Draco and Snape,
whose relationship is completely inappropriate.
Like, wow.
This power dynamic that Snape holds over Draco and the way he manipulates him emotionally is like seriously problematic.
It's very uncomfy. It's wicked uncomfy. It's not good. And, you know, What I love about revisiting these chapters kind of randomly is it's kind of fun. I would imagine a little more fun for you to just drop into a chapter without having read the chapter before or the chapter after. I say a little more fun for you because I've read these books so many times. Yeah. I can usually tell you exactly the context, although I completely thought this was a different chapter, but okay. It's interesting hearing this conversation between Snape and Draco because not reading this in a linear way, we're almost kind of in Harry's shoes hearing this without context. Whereas, of course, having read the book, we know what the Unbreakable Vow is. We know what Draco's mission is that they keep alluding to. But it's sort of interesting to kind of be able to be like really removed from the rest of the story and just focused on this one chapter. And you're sort of like in Harry's shoes going, what the fuck are they talking about? You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Anything else about the Unbreakable Vow before we plow forward?
The Unbreakable Wow.
It's time for Hits from the Golden Egg.
Hits from the Golden Egg.
Children? Yeah, I don't know why that.
Gather around the radio.
Sure. I'm going to let you go first. What's your hit from the Golden Egg?
So my hit from the Golden Egg is an entire album.
For the first time.
Yeah, and this one came to me super quick.
Oh,
like halfway through reading the chapter, I thought, I know what this is.
Okay, tell us.
And this is an album by The Cure from the 90s called Wish.
Ooh, very nice.
And it is one of my favorite albums, period, by anyone of all time. Definitely in the top 10, if not top 5, but would definitely make the top 10 list.
Very nice.
And the reason I chose that is because it was my first really ultra sad album that I fell in love with and connected to in a very real emotional way. And how I got this album was there was a guy that I went to school with. I was a freshman. He was a senior. And I knew him from the theater world. And his name was Johnny Prince. And I used to think that was the freaking coolest name in the world.
It's kind of a great name. Yeah.
And he always wore combat boots. Johnny, if you're out there, get in touch with me. Feedback. And we would talk about music and stuff. And I was at the age where I was starting to listen to punk bands and everything. But my brother and I, like I've talked about a lot on the podcast, have been listening to music together and pop music for a very long time, like since I was pretty young. So I knew who The Cure was, but I wasn't like, I never really listened to them.
Yeah.
And then Johnny was like, you have to get this Cure album called Wish, which had probably just come out. Maybe it was the new one or something. And I got it. And there were so many times that I would sit in my room and listen to that album at night because I would listen to music while I was going to sleep a lot. And I would just stare out of my window and
so dramatic.
Right. I would listen to The Sundays and I would listen to The Cure, and it's a sad album. Mm-hmm. It's also super beautiful. Mm. It's so well produced. It sounds like it's from 2024.
Wow.
Anyway, if you're a Cure fan, if you're not a fan of The Cure and you want an introduction to them that's not super jangly poppy early,
yeah,
Cure and is more like
more palatable, like more, or I should say more universally appealing, would you say?
Yeah, but you have to like Sad Bastard stuff.
Well, sure. But I mean, come on. These are Potterheads we're talking about.
So I would listen to the whole album today in preparation for talking about it.
Nice.
And every song that this is one of those albums that, so it came out in 92.
Mm-hmm.
So I started listening to this in 93. Mm-hmm. So I've been listening to this album for 30 years.
Nice.
A lot for 30 years. And it's one of these albums that when the next song comes on, I'm like, oh, damn, this is a good song. And the next song comes on, oh, damn, it's a good song.
That's a great album.
From the Edge of the Deep Green Sea, which is track 4 from Wish, I listened to it today and started it over and listened to it again. The song I've listened to for 30 years. And I thought, this is a perfect song.
Oh,
if anyone wants to know what lyrics and music and arrangement and tone and everything, to me, this is the definition of a perfect song.
Very nice. I love it.
It's a perfect song.
Okay, that's good. My hit from the Golden Egg, I went with a song. And it's interesting because this band came up very, very briefly last week towards the end of last week's episode, but I chose a song by First Aid Kit, Winter Is All Over You, which is a really haunting song. Whoa. Really beautiful song. If you want an introduction to First Aid Kit and what their whole kind of vibe is, Winter Is All Over You is kind of a perfect song to do that with. The reason I chose it for this chapter is because there's a lot of desperation in this song and a lot of kind of speaking of distance. And it just kind of reminds me of like the desperation of Draco and the distance between Ron and Hermione and all the things that someone is assuming another person is thinking, and you know, the pain that you can leave in your wake.
Yeah.
It's that kind of song. It's a beautiful song, but haunting is definitely the best word to describe.
And this Cure album is kind of haunting. Yeah. I forgot to say, I chose it because it defined for me the beginnings of heartache.
Mm.
Like starting to become a teenager. Mm-hmm. And feel that heartache and that pain. And it was such a great soundtrack for me.
Yeah, very good. Those are two pretty depressing submissions.
Get on some sad bastard stuff.
It's time for Patronus Moments.
Patronus Moments are moments in your life that are not so dark.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert Smith.
That's so dark.
That's great. My Patronus moment is I did a tarot reading for a good friend of mine over text, and it was just one of those readings that was very spot on and very coherent and clear and really made a lot of sense to the person that I was reading for. And it just made me feel like I had really helped out my friend in a way that was so specific and so deep, you know, but also like in this kind of fun way.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
And what a quick and convenient way to have an intimate connection with a friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. Technology. So that was my Patronus moment.
Where technology meets spiritualism, meets friendship.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Why, thank you. What's your Patronus moment?
So my Patronus moment is I went on a bike ride with my friend John.
Hey, John. Oh,
hey, John Frame. Which also always makes you think about him spilling the dog bowl.
My favorite.
We went on a bike ride, and we crossed the street, went over to the lake, and we're taking a little path around. And I was riding past this one spot. You'd recognize it if I showed it to you, but there's two magnificent live oak trees on a little kind of almost like a peninsula jutting out into the lake.
Yeah.
And you know, I love scattered light through trees and shadows. It's like my favorite thing in the world.
Yes.
And that's what I'm out hunting all the time. And the shadows were so perfect on the trees. And it must have been like 75 degrees with an 8 mph breeze. Like it was the most perfect. If you put humans in a zoo,
right,
this is the temperature you would try to keep them at.
We've been having beautiful weather. Don't move here.
And but as I was riding by and I looked at this spot, and I've been looking at this spot my whole life for years now, for 45 years, I've been riding around this lake, and I looked at that beautiful spot and the way that the light was and the way that the breeze was and the peacefulness of that scene, it helped me to remember something that I often forget.
Yeah.
And that is the thought that I had is, if the stable underpinnings of all of this is good, call it God, if you want to, then this is the natural state.
Mm.
This is God's voice. This is what we are meant for. This is the foundation of the universe. And this is just a natural state.
Yeah.
This strong giant tree that's exuding all of this energy of life, and it's at rest and it's at peace.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's God's not inside of a missile.
Right.
You know, he's not like, and I'm just using the term God and he just because I don't have any other word to describe it.
Yeah. But
the essence of everything is not It's not violent and it's not chaotic.
Yeah.
And I think that I often forget that and that we all forget that. And sometimes it's nice to look at the world at homeostasis and think about that feeling of peace and how fleeting and small those moments are.
Yeah.
And how we should wish all those on as many of those as we can out into the world.
I think that's beautiful. Dag, the places your mind goes when you look at a tree. Incredible. Incredible. It's time to shout out our marauders.
So this marauder shout out is in the spirit of early British new wave with a little touch of like the two-tone ska era, the Selector, Madness, those type of bands.
Oh my.
And you'll understand why.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Okay.
Teddy Cummings, Larissa Oatman, Maeve Richards, she's the goat man.
Yes, I totally get it. Yes.
What? Cody Jerish for sure is Samantha Tillman's a real man. Lindsay Prestige is magical. You know, there was always like weird things.
Oh, always, like yes.
I got some new clothes. You want to tag them? Melissa Hunter, Magnum. Nick Tillman, plowing up the ground. Natalia Ward is putting it down. Kelly Moore, more dancing.
Yes. Keep it going.
Amber Biggs is handing out cigs. She probably doesn't like that. Mallory Gallagher is coming right after her. Josh Bailey is going to kill me. Dean Heath is a Carolina Panther. Rawr.
Rawr.
There also might be like a small hint of Roxy music in it too.
I like it.
Heather Bevels on the treble. Pete Collins, don't waste the bass. Michael Terry's pretty scary. Hannah Gibb is the Bonovenator. The
Bonovenator. I like it.
That's like how Paris would say it.
Bonovenator?
It's the new dance crave invented by Stephen McCabe. Here's a surprise. Is it Michael Terry? Oh, no, it's our friend Jessica Berry.
Extra special shout out. Yay.
Do you think that you can go back and lay some synth over this?
No. No. I mean, can I?
Which you don't feel like.
Yeah. It. Am I going to? No, probably not. I'm probably not going to. I think that it's better without it, if I'm being honest. Okay. So next week. More fan fiction. Super exciting.
Fanfic.
Fanfic. If you like our show, tell your friends. Get them on board. Spread the news.
Tell them it's a completely normal show. It's not unhinged.
No. Nope.
We stay on topic.
Like, all the time. For every minute, we never stray. Any parting words for our dear listeners?
I think if I asked Robert Smith what I should say, I think that he would say to me, it doesn't matter what you say, I just can't stay here every yesterday like you keep on acting out the same way.